Okay, we'll call this meeting of the Quality of Life Ad Hoc Meeting to order at 5:10 PM on May 3rd, 2016. We'll start with any public comments. Hearing none, we'll move to any closed session items.
There aren't any closed session items, however, I did want to just caution everybody that because some of these agenda items may have been considered by previous committees in the past, we may have an issue with respect to a serial meeting under the Brown Act, which prohibits more than three council members from conferring on an item outside of a regularly scheduled council meeting. And it doesn't matter if they confer at different times. So if any of you were on a previous committee that considered any of these items before, and you consider them now, I'd ask you to please wipe the slate clean. We're starting fresh today. This is a different committee with a new agenda, and put aside anything that was said before and don't mention it to anybody at this meeting.
Okay. Okay. So if there was an item that was considered, should we strike it from the agenda?
I don't think you have to go that far. Obviously, you wouldn't be wrong to do that, because that would be a foolproof way of making sure that there was no serial meeting. But I think if the Brown Act contains an exception, for example, if I wanted to go around to four of you and individually discuss one of these items, I could do it. It wouldn't be a serial meeting. But I would have to take care not to communicate between any of you what any of the rest of you said, so that there'd be no effective discussion on the way.
Okay.
So yeah, you could do that. I don't think you have to do that.
Okay. Why don't we? Did we actually meet at this one?
I believe we did.
I thought we had postponed this one to allow more time for the city manager to review.
The street sweeping?
This was the March 23rd agenda. I think we postponed that one, didn't we?
The whole meeting?
Well, I know we postponed a number of these.
I think there was a little bit of talking about street sweeping, but not much. I wasn't here when that was done.
Okay, and yeah, that think, was a I pending think, item on the 23rd that we did not discuss. I think we actually discussed that at the meeting prior to the March 23rd meeting.
I don't think we talked about
it. It was continued for 3 months until June 7th.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, I would recommend that we strike item 1, since it was originally continued to June 7th anyway. I think you requested 3 months to review that.
Just from an implementation standpoint.
Okay. Without objection, just to be clear, no closed session items, correct?
Correct.
Okay, well then, let me just quickly, on the open session items, if you're okay with that, I think what I'd like to do is continue item 1. That was the only item that I believe we've discussed in committee.
Yep. Does it get any better, though, to continue it? If we can't talk about it because it's been discussed, then we won't be able to discuss it next time either.
What we used to do was we would refer this to the full council.
Yeah.
Right.
With
the recommendation that we referred back to this committee.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
Once you have an intervening council,
there you go.
They all consider it.
Why don't we just do that then?
That's fine.
We'll just pitch it back to this committee at the next council meeting.
Item one.
Mr. Brown envisioned that in the time when he passed us.
Item one will be.
I don't think Mr. Brown even wrote it.
Item one will be continued to for consideration at the next full council meeting. And just to be clear again, it was requested that we rehear this item on June 7th.
Okay.
Item number two is the financial control audit item. I do not believe we've discussed that in committee.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
And by the way, if you've discussed it in a committee, but one of the committee members, for example, was Ricky Johnson, who is not on the council anymore, then I wouldn't see a problem then, because you wouldn't have a quorum of the current council having discussed the matter previously.
Okay. Financial control audit?
Yeah, I think the council members know where we are on this. These are the audits for the years that we didn't finish, or is this the reference to the financial? This is probably the reference to the audit we want to do by Moss Adams.
No, this is in response to the finding that we've had deficiencies and successive audits related to adequate financial controls.
Yeah, that's the same as Moss Adams.
Yeah.
What we have decided to do, and there's been a proposal obtained from a firm called Moss Adams that does financial control audits, and we think the circumstances are sufficiently disorganized that we need to bring in professionals to do this.
To make a recommendation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they're going to come in and do a full recommendation that'll be a public document, and we'll move forward with implementing those.
Okay.
Our new finance director obviously walks in the door immediately understanding that there are procedures that are not in place that need to be put in place.
Okay.
And we're already talking about that.
Okay, so that will be an item that will be brought to council at some future date. Do
with
we have any idea when?
Yeah, it should be soon. The contract needs to be brought to the council.
Okay. Any questions?
No.
Okay, any questions from the public? Hearing none, we will move to item number 3, developer impact fee nexus study status. City manager?
This one is on the short list of things that we need to do. It's a long, short list, but this, I'm sure the city attorney's office is, so I don't know if Don's aware of this, but you know, in order to charge developer fees, it has to tie to a nexus study, and the nexus study is supposed to be revised on a regular periodic basis, and it's been a long time since nobody's aware that it's ever been revised.
Thanks, Chief.
Yeah, so we are, Mark Persico will be working with the people in the engineering area to come up with an RFP to get somebody to come in and do this. These are not inexpensive tasks. It's a relatively expensive effort to go through and do something like this. And, you know, to the extent you have a really well-defined master plan, you know, there's multiple different types of developer fees, you know, for different kinds of infrastructure, for different departmental functions. There's probably a library impact fee here, I hope.
At least there was.
Yeah, there should be. So we need to go through and have each of those master plans looked at for determination of the nexus calculations. The problem is we don't have master plans for most of them. So it will be an expensive process and time-consuming process, but we need to do it. Technically, we could have issues if we don't get this done. So,
real quick, Mr. City Manager, a couple of years ago when we first went into bankruptcy, we did a citywide fee structure, and I don't know if that's the same type of study, but
it's probably the kinds of a fee study that would relate to the charges, fees and charges for different functions, like a fire inspection fee and all that. This is a development. This would be like a fee that would be charged for fire stations,
right?
You know, for that kind of thing, or for sewer lines, or for road work, you know, those kinds of major infrastructures, and there's firms that do this for a living. I mean, it's not hard. There'll be multiple bidders for this. It's not hard to find firms.
And again, any anticipated timeline on this?
You know, we need to get to this to the council in the next quarter. We really not the finished report, because it'll take a while, but the contract to do it.
Okay. Yeah, I was, I think for the record, we could should go around the room for the audio recording, just to clarify who's here quickly. Henry Nickel, 5th Ward Council member, and then to my left.
Bessine Richard, 6th Ward Council member.
Mark Scott, city manager.
Ed Urjavac, library director.
Chris Lopez, chief of staff for Mayor Davis.
Yvette Walker, representing the Upland Community Foundation.
Tom Hanneman, fire.
Don DeMichelle, deputy city attorney.
Okay, and let the record reflect we did have Jorge Carlos in the room.
He's just come
back into the room. Okay. Without objection, we'll move on to item 4. Do you have any questions?
No questions.
Okay. We'll move to item 4, RDA disposition plan. Again, city manager.
Yeah, this one took a good turn, you know, the end of the year when the state finally approved our plan at the 11 and a half hour, that's not even a word, hour. And so we finally got our plan approved, and the steps were taken by our successor agency to transfer the property to the city. And now, you know this, late yesterday, were you on that email? Late yesterday, the state notified us that
100 more days ago.
They're going to invoke their right to audit the action of the successor agency, which will slow us down. It could be all, you know, they'll probably be no earlier than their deadline, which is the middle of August. So, and this is a troublesome thing in the sense that both the stadium lease issue conceivably could be affected by it, and the Home Depot deal can be affected by it. So we're not happy about this, but they're probably within their rights.
They have never resolved whether the stadium is a government use or a hold for future development.
That's right.
Or a sale.
That's right.
So it's even premature to be talking about that one.
That's true.
As far as Arden Guthrie, that was supposed to be, as I understood it, that was not on the list at all. So it didn't relate to a long-range property management plan. Because the SBEDC still had it, and only recently transferred it to the successor agency. Now the ask is to transfer it to the city as housing assets.
What's being audited.
Half of the money was put up from the Lomont Fund.
Right. That's exactly what they're looking at, that action recently, which I've stretched the title here a little bit, but that's where a lot of this activity is going. We need to bring to the council all of this property that we now have. I want to get established with the council what process we're going to use to evaluate these properties and decide disposition. For instance, There are people who are ready to go right now that have their eye on certain pieces of property, and in some cases, people who could make an argument, and I won't go into any specifics, but people who could make an argument that they've been involved with the city on these properties for some time and that they should be treated differently than a property that might be put up for open proposals or bids. And that might be. And it is the city council's right to determine how to go on these. And most, if not all of them, are actually subject to close session because of real estate negotiations. So that would probably be the way we do it. We put it on the closed session agenda and we go to the closed session and talk about it. And the council can decide. The only thing that I think is important is that when we do this, we do it in such a way that we follow something that's understandable and defensible with the public on how we go about making decisions on what properties get treated in what manner. So I like to talk to a council about criteria for decision making before we actually start applying decisions. And so that's where we'll be going with this soon. I'm getting a report from the staff, you know, Steve Duquette in particular, who's working on this. And fortunately, we've got Don, who's helps incredibly on this stuff. So we've got a good team working on it, but we're going to need to bring all of this forward.
Okay. And I would anticipate, because of the audit, we won't see any real movement until after that is...
Well, we could come in and talk about disposition policy anytime. We don't really have to wait to do that.
We can do that.
The process, talk about the process we're going to follow. There's no reason to wait to do that.
I don't think.
That can't be in closed session, though.
That's true. That's a generic discussion.
In closed session, there is the exception for real property negotiations, but it's pretty narrow.
Yep.
And there are attorney general opinions interpreting it that say that basically all you can talk about is price and terms, payment terms. And you can stretch that a little bit. But
yeah. Well, I've been in six cities that have stretched it a little bit.
I'm sure there are many more than six across the state that have discussed a whole load of stuff under that exception.
But we cannot talk general policy on process. That has to be in public.
Okay. So I would anticipate in the next few months we should...
Yeah, I think we're going to do our budget first, our city budget first, because we're really under the gun on that. But after that, it's within the months right after that we'll be in.
And I would just recommend that the council be notified about the audit, just so if we do get questioned about stuff, we have a sense of what's
going
on.
We'll let everybody know.
One question, did they use the term audit?
Probably not.
I can read it.
I can read
it. It's review. It's under the statute, and they say their review period is 100 days. So it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to drill down on it.
No, but they will.
We can easily establish that one half of the money was Lomond. That's not even an issue.
Yeah, the memo or whatever it is doesn't say what it is they're taking issue with.
I just got a feeling we haven't been on the good side through this whole process anyway.
They like Don.
Yeah. They didn't like me the day I was up
here. See, he's so good. He's got the words down exactly. Pursuant to HSC 34179 parentheses H, the Department of Finance may request a review of oversight board action submitted to the department. In an email, this email serves as a notice that we are requesting a review of this action. The action being the resolution of the successor agency approving the amended housing asset transfer form. It says form, it should be from. And then I just erased the whole, oh, there it is. From the successor agency, the redevelopment agency, and certain related actions. This is all hieroglyphics.
Well, just the short of it is, when they started this redevelopment dissolution process, they realized that they couldn't just pull the rug out from under affordable housing. So they said, the city can be the successor housing agency, as opposed to the successor redevelopment agency, which they plan to dissolve at some point. The city can be the housing successor. And the city can take over all of the housing assets. Those are the ones that have been purchased with this low-mod income money, which when redevelopment agencies were in business, they had to take 20% of their revenue and put it in a separate fund, the low-moderate income housing fund. And if you bought property with that, then it went on this housing asset transfer hat list. And the hat list was supposed to have been filed back in 2012, so we filed one, but it was seriously incomplete at that point, and we've now amended it, and we put the Arden Guthrie properties on there, which they weren't before, and that in itself could be the reason that Department of Finance wants to look at it.
I would imagine.
They never tell you why they're interested in something, they just tell you it'll be a few months.
It might be quick, but it probably won't be.
Probably not.
Any questions, Basine?
None.
Okay, anything from the public? Hearing none, we'll move on to item five, which is business licensing contract. This is was stipulated in the plan of adjustment, if I recall.
Right. It's one of several potential contracting options that are discussed. When this came up the last time, I asked if we could put it off because it's not ripe, and it's just going to worry people.
Okay.
And it's just, you know, we're in the charter discussions, which are about to happen again. They're talking about moving this function into. Yeah, I know something's falling out of the sky.
It is alive.
It could be protein, yeah.
You hungry?
It's long day. But the... No. I don't even remember what I'm talking about. They, you know, the charter says that we would move this function from the clerk's office into the finance department, which I strongly encourage. And I would think that rather than going out and contracting it and then changing contract administrators, it makes more sense to do it when it's
okay.
When that's done.
So. All right. So this will be post charter. Okay. The next item was, any questions on that?
Yeah.
Any questions from the public? Okay. The next item was makeshift memorials. I know this was brought to the committee by Councilwoman Marquez. She's unable to make it today. I would like to request that we move this item to the next meeting to give her an opportunity to comment.
Yeah.
Is there any objection to that?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me mention one thing while we're here, mm-hmm. because it seems to work under this. We are going to need to move the makeshift memorial that's at the center. And, you know, there's the two locations where it's existed. And the thought process is to put a big banner up on both locations, a big notice up to people that explains that due to weather and conditions, we have to remove it. But that all of the permanent kinds of things that have been left there will be put in storage and maintained. So if people have brought candles or other, you know, not perishable things, but real life permanent kind of things, that we'll put those into storage in case somebody wants to use them or document them at some point. But that the rest of it will be cleaned up, and that there'll be that there are discussions about a permanent kind of display that obviously involves the county. So we're going to let people know that people are not being forgotten here. It's just we, out of respect, we want the memorial to look right. I've asked the staff at the same time to make sure all those medians along there are cleaned up, because right now it looks like spring in San Bernardino. All the weeds are growing. And I've said, when we do this, let's also clean that up at the same time and maybe plant some stuff out in the median just that location deserves that respect.
Mm-hmm.
So I just bring that up. That's not what Ms. Marquez was going to bring up, but I thought I would mention that.
Okay, without objection, we'll move that to our next quality of life meeting. I think the next item was also requested by Ms. Marquez.
And she was going to do the update.
Yeah, so why don't we move item 7 to the next meeting without objection?
Yeah.
Any objection, Basine?
No.
Okay, hearing none, we'll move that to the next meeting. And finally, last but not least, discussion on the Friends of the Library 501c3 not-for-profit presentation. Just a bit of quick background on this item. Since I've been on council, we've had a number of discussions about approaching various not-for-profits or philanthropic organizations that provide grants that could be used to augment needs in the city, be they parks and rec facilities or programs, other types of programs. Unfortunately, the city does not have any mechanism to apply or receive those kinds of funds, unlike surrounding cities. And so discussion has sort of evolved in terms of whether or not we could expand the scope and function of an existing 501c3 that effectively operates within the city. There are guidelines. The council would not be involved. There would be no formal connection to the city, but the idea would be having a not-for-profit that would have a be for the general benefit of the city. I've asked today Ms. Yvette Walker to join us. Do you want to give a quick background on your what you do and what approaches have been made? We also have Ed Etchevik from our library, and maybe give a brief background on our existing 501c3 connected to the library, Friends of the Library, and then I'd like to have a discussion about what, if anything, we might do to either amend or expand that organization or create something entirely new.
Right, so thank you again for inviting me this afternoon, Councilman Nickel. As he mentioned, I am here on behalf of the Upland Community Foundation, which was initially developed in 1995 as the Upland Library Foundation. In 1999, they decided that they wanted to expand the scope of what it was that they could do for the community and decided to rename themselves to Upland Community Foundation and act as an umbrella for other local nonprofit initiatives looking to develop and expand programs under the umbrella without necessarily having to go through the process of filing for their own independent 501c3, incurring those costs of filing or insurance and things of that nature. And since 1999, the Upland Community Foundation has expanded and taken on projects such as the Upland Military Banner Project, which displays and pays for banners of local military members throughout the city of Upland. The recent one that was very, very successful project was the Veterans Monument Project. In less than 10 months, the community raised in kind and in dollar donations over $1.5 million to erect an obelisk that represented the five branches of the military. They created a beautiful wall with a water feature in front of City Hall that represented a lot of the local military family members and those that served and represented the community. That was recently unveiled about 4 or 5 months ago. Some of the other programs include Friends of the Upland Library, Friends of the Upland Animal Shelter, again acting as an umbrella to allow fundraising activities and program expansion activities. Those are only a few. Let me think of another one.
I suggest that certainly. You do something for the group and maybe explain how community foundations work, because it may not be intuitive to everybody, and they're great vehicles.
Certainly.
And people might say, well, why would it make sense for us to be involved with an Upland Community Foundation? But it's because of the umbrella that it provides.
Right.
You could provide support for people living in any community.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it. In the instance of the Upland Community Foundation, basically its mission is to enrich and to preserve the history and the quality of life for the city of Upland and surrounding communities. So any programs that fall under that mission, which is actually a pretty broad mission, they're invited, the board votes on the initiative or the program that is looking to receive the 501c3 status, and there we go. With that, obviously, as I mentioned, you bypass the waiting time for the 501c3 status application process, as well as any legal fees or filing fees. And you are taken under the umbrella of the D&O insurance protection as well. And you become a member of the board, so you have input on, you know, various things having to do with decisions moving forward as a group.
And the money that is raised would be raised within the conditions set in, I don't know anything about this one,
right,
but I'm just, in general, would be the conditions set by the entity that,
right,
that establishes the fund within your umbrella fund.
Exactly.
And so that the foundation, for instance, can't reach into that pot and take the money and spend it on something
right.
else. And yet you benefit by the investment work that's done for the whole portfolio of investments, I assume.
Right, exactly.
So that, you know, that's another service that gets paid for out of the overall foundation.
Right, right. So basically, as you mentioned, any interest that is accrued by, you know, the lot of money that is held through the account is distributed for other programs that may be, you know, running low, such as, you know, we have a Chafee statue, so to keep it, you know, maintained, we'll move money around. Or if the library all of a sudden needs new carpet, you know, that's kind of how we will distribute the funds. But in terms of each individual program, the money that they put in is the money that will be available to them at any time for at their discretion and their board's discretion to finance their initiatives and move forward on projects, so long as they fall under the guidelines of the entity of the Upland Community Foundation.
Yeah, currently most of these types of expenditures in the city are expended through general fund, so the maintenance of memorials and the upkeep of different facilities.
I imagine you'd have to put it in a budget and fund it, maybe developer fees. And I don't know how much money there's going to be in there, so I don't know how much funding is available. But when you set up your own 501c3, and I assume there isn't one yet right now in the library.
Right.
So when you set up your own, there's all that administrative work that you have to do, and the filings with the state and all of that. Many, many times when you try to fund a specific project for which you don't have an established 501c3, you can turn to a community foundation. And I'm taking it there's not a San Bernardino Community Foundation. I'm guessing that.
Not that I'm aware of.
But you turn to a community foundation, and literally in a very short matter of time, they can establish a fund under that umbrella authority. And so donors are able to give their money and have it be tax deductible. So.
Exactly.
So maybe if Ed could give a quick overview of what we currently have in terms of our library foundation and just a quick history on that organization and how it operates.
Well, we actually have both a library foundation and a Friends of the Library. There's two separate nonprofits. Now, the Friends of the Library probably goes back about 40 years in terms of establishing its nonprofit status. Its primary revenue generator is the periodic book sales that it has about every other month. It's comprised strictly of volunteers, mostly people who are retired from their professional careers. So I can't speak for them, but my general idea is something like this would be rather ambitious for them at this stage of their career, since they don't have any professional staff. It's strictly just volunteers, most of whom are retired. Now, the Library Foundation has a shorter tenure. It's existed probably about 25 years. That was set up to more to get endowments and inheritances and that. It also is a 501c3. It has one person who works in on the library on a daily basis doing the various accounting and day-to-day operations for them. That group tends to be people who are still working in their professional careers. But again, I mean, I can't speak for them, but something like this would be rather ambitious. I think they might have some reservations about it, but like I said, I can't speak for them. It's, you know, something that, since they really operate independently, except for when I want them to fund X project, Y project, and I go to them with my proposals, basically they operate as their own independent entities. They keep their own money, they have their own bylaws, they bank their own accounts, they...
This is very common.
...file their own taxes. So basically, except for asking them money, they pretty much, when I ask them for money, pretty much they function as their own operations. Okay.
How did Upland approach this? Was it, did the board, I mean, what would be the role of the city council or the city itself in this? I would assume be very limited.
It is limited. I would say the closest affiliation we have is an ex-officio liaison, Ray Musser. He was part of the board prior to him becoming the mayor. Aside from that, we have Tom Thomas. He's the president, which previously was a council member for over 20 years and is retired and is no longer a council member. We have Roberta Knighton. She is the director of Parks and Recreation for the city of Upland. And as I mentioned, kind of some of the other representatives of the various groups, such as the CERT, the Community Emergency Response Team. So there's the representative for that project is on the board. Myself, I serve as the secretary. We have Lisa Monforte, which is the representative for the Upland Military Banner Program. We have Ralph Cavallo. He's the representative for the Veterans Monument Project, and so on. So the board is comprised of the members of which the programs are under the umbrella, basically. And Fern Musser acts as the treasurer, so she does all of the heavy lifting when it comes to the accounting and when it comes to the distribution of
things
funds.
Things that no one else wants to
yes,
do.
Yes, that's the tough stuff, yes. So.
What would be required to get something like this going if we were to consider something like this? What would be the action that would need to be taken? Is there any action that would be taken on the part of the council, or is it purely just an independent group of people that would have to take it on themselves?
Well, yeah, I think it could probably be done either way.
Right.
Somebody would have to do it. Somebody would have to go in and establish whatever the fund was. You call them funds,
right.
Each individual fund?
Funds, initiatives, programs,
yeah.
Projects.
So I'm sure there's an application of some sort that gets filled out, and then their board would act to establish it, and you'd sign some kind of a contract that would specify. There's probably a sample contract we could get hold of to look at to see what would be involved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know what other local sensitivities they are, because this isn't my project, but I do know that I've used community foundation funds many times in the past, mm-hmm. in multiple cities, because it's just easy.
Right.
I think one of our frustrations was when I first came on, there was a Home Depot grant that we could have applied for that we could use for some park mm-hmm. facilities. We didn't
right.
qualify because we didn't have a 501c3.
Right.
So we went somewhere else. And we more than qualified given our circumstances, but we can't apply it.
You're not in a position
to
apply
for it. We
don't even
have the means
right.
that we're just completely disqualified.
Right.
Well, I would advocate that at some point we should create something. You know, the trouble with the 501c3 is it's got to state a purpose. You know, it's got to be chartered through the state. It's got to state a purpose, and anything you fundraise has to fit that purpose, but you can do a pretty broad.
Right.
And that's
yeah, we have
don't reinvent
covered.
The wheel.
Yeah.
She stated that purpose already.
But but for fundraising purposes, they will administer a fund on a project basis so that you don't have to go out and create your own to receive money. But if you want to use a 501c3, as part of a grant application, I'm not sure how that works with their funds. I don't know how that would work.
Well, the way that works now, the various groups within our umbrella or under our umbrella are eligible to apply for and receive grants and have and successfully in the past.
That's really powerful then.
Right.
We have a couple of 501c3s, but they don't do fundraising.
Yeah.
They were created to help the RDA.
Oh, great. That worked really well, too, I understand.
Well, we have solar power panels on the RDA building that we aren't paying anything for.
That's true.
Haven't made an electricity.
Well, that one I'm sure worked fine. I thought you meant the one that was to receive all of the property.
That was the one. Well, they own the company that owns the company that owns the solar power.
We wonder why we don't have RDAs anymore.
Arm's length.
Yeah. What would be the recommendation in terms of moving forward on something like this?
I don't know enough about the specific project to be able. It's not one of my departments, but. But I'd be happy to help in any way if I can help.
Probably the best thing would be to speak to either the foundation or the Friends. Frankly, I mean, I think the foundation, I mean, I'm being honest, I think it's kind of a long shot for either one. Because I'm being frank and honest because I don't want to waste people's time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the foundation would be a slightly better chance than the Friends because they're a little more creative and that. It's still probably a long shot, frankly, but the best thing would be to, they have a monthly meeting, would probably be to address that, to ask to be put on their agenda for their monthly meeting and speak to their board of directors and see how open they would be toward that idea.
And when you say Eplin Community Foundation assists surrounding communities, what does that mean?
So to give you an example, one of the programs that we support is the Fury Foundation. They're based in Ontario. And one of the programs that we support under their foundation is the Health to Kick program, which basically has gone out and shared the message of healthy eating, saying no to drugs and alcohol, the importance of education, and physical activity to over 50,000 students in surrounding school districts. It's because, again, it falls under the umbrella mission statement. Now, if you think to expedite the process to be able to receive funds sooner, I can definitely present this to the board and ask that your program or your initiative be taken under the umbrella, under whatever name or mission that you're looking to conduct and go from there.
Okay.
The only thing I would recommend moving forward is that you establish and develop, what the program name is going to be or what it's going to be about, and develop a mission statement and give a summary or a synopsis of what it's going to be about, what the goals are. Mm-hmm. And, so long as it fits that mission statement, then it's something that we can definitely present to the board, have one of your members join us at board meetings and be a part of the board and get involved as well.
Okay.
We did, in Fresno, we wanted to raise money for homeless services, and we didn't have the money ourselves. Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
And so my mayor got all this free TV time from all, we had 7 TV stations and multiple radio stations. And so she decided to start a program where she would ask everybody in town to give $1 a month for homeless services, $12 a year. And we got a lot of people that gave money, but we didn't have any. We were trying to receive it at City Hall, and it wasn't tax deductible.
Oh, no.
And people actually care about that at $1 a month. And so we finally placed it with a community foundation, and it just worked like a charm. So. That's how those things work.
Right.
Yeah, we actually did have some discussion last night, and maybe this might dovetail with some of that. If there's some ways we could explore how to link and partner with your organization, it might augment some of what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, if you have a good reason to do something, it's really simple to do something like this.
How you draw funds from it, too? You bill city services against the the grant or against the
foundation? You have to follow their process.
Right. So the process would be that any expenses that you incur through your program be sent and invoiced to the foundation to have a check cut. So that they can keep it, you know, for their records and for their accounting purposes.
So you do some logical time frame so that you're just not doing it every day.
The quality of life group that we have out there, that we pay certain fees to the different organizations that assist in the citywide cleanup. If you could build those services against, we'd fundraise.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, if we went into a fundraising mode on that. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Well, what seems like the problem would be getting that foundation to join in.
Yeah.
Especially since they've been around for so long, you know.
Yeah, they should get first shot.
Mm-hmm.
But if like I said, if you want, I mean, I'm being realistic. I think it's probably kind of a long shot. But like I said, if you want to be put on their agenda, it'd probably be helpful if someone prepare a letter and explain what the basic thesis of your hopes, and then I can ask them to agendize it for one of the meetings, and see all you can do is ask. I'm giving you a totally honest opinion because based on what I observed from them, but who knows? I mean, they might be open to it. I can't speak for them because, like I said, they function independently. But I think the foundation would be a better bet than the friends.
Okay. Okay, well, what I'd like to do then, I'll maybe, how should we proceed with this? What's the best course of action?
I agree with what Basine just said. I think you probably need to have some discussion with your groups.
Okay.
And whatever help you need for that, we can all provide.
When is our next meeting?
No. The foundation usually meets the third Monday of the month, and the friends usually meet the third Thursday of the month.
So really,
you need to join the friends. I'm always joined. I'm usually the young one.
You usually.
And I'm not that young.
So the foundation's the third Monday, you said?
Yeah, usually third Monday, and the friends are usually the third Thursday.
And they meet at Feldheim?
No, the foundation meets at a bank here on 2nd Street. I can give you the exact address.
Okay.
The friends meet at Feldheim.
Okay. All right, we'll follow up with them.
What has the foundation funded in recent years? What kind of things?
They've paid for a technology upgrade for computers and servers. They're not installed yet, but we're on site and our techs are trying to set them up. And then each have contributed funds for books. They each contribute $20,000 for books. We actually have very little money in the actual city budget for books because pretty much most of that is geared toward the open hours. Plus, we know that they can more easily augment, buy something tangible like books, so we're better to spend the dollars we have on personnel. And then the foundation also pays for the ebook and overdrive, and the vendor is Overdrive. It's an ebook and audio subscription, so they pay the annual cost for it, and then they give us a certain allotment to buy new titles each month, and then also databases.
So they do quite a bit.
Oh yeah. I mean, the technology upgrade was a $300,000 project.
Whoa!
And the annual cost for books and the Overdrive subscription and the databases, that's another $70,000.
They raise a lot of money.
Yeah, so they get it first.
Yeah, they get first shot.
So
absolutely.
Yeah, because they had to work to build an endowment until they felt that they were able to fund projects, and then for a while their attitude was, "Well, we're saving the money for a rainy day." Well,
yeah,
I said,
that happens a lot.
If you're bankrupt, I think that qualifies.
I wonder about what an emergency reserve is when you get to the point where you've got no money left and people are going, no, we don't touch our emergency reserve.
So then...
I'll get in touch.
You'll touch base with me and see where we go.
Okay.
Great.
All right. Any questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Yvette. Thanks for your presentation. Very helpful.
Thank you.
Okay, without, there's nothing further, we'll go ahead and agenda or adjourn this meeting at 6 o'clock. So, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Go to another exciting charter review.
All right. Have fun.
My life is really
exciting. Well, they might not stay till 8 o'clock. There's a chance they might not. They said, last time they said they thought they're almost done.
You know, they said they were going to start at 5:30, so they wouldn't have to go all the way to 8. But they still go to 8. They go longer than the council does sometimes.
How's it going?
Oh, yeah.
Good. How are you?
They got fewer opportunities to hear themselves talk.
Oh, they work hard. I admire them, their work ethic.
It's like it's on the police department, not on the fire department for us.
You guys getting through all this?
How are you?
Fine.
Good. Our biggest thing is these physicals. You know, the county.
Yeah.
We were told that basically you just need to establish a baseline. I'm going now to an echogram. Well, you saw something kind of funny. I'm like, hold on a second.
You all
of
that?
Yeah.
Well, I guess you guys.
See you later.
The regular county employee, they go and look at you and go like this. Oh, you're good.
Yeah, that's
but,
well.
Yeah.
I got it. The I'm nearsighted. I used to be farsighted, but my right eye. I'm at like 20/60 on it. And she said, well, on your far side of vision, on your right eye, you don't pass. And I'm like, yeah, I'm also 50 years old, and that's earned vision. And she said, well, I think, you know, we have to have a standard here. And I'm like, you do for a new employee that's just coming in. I said, you need to realize that all of us have careers, we have families. This is this damage, a baseline. That's my baseline, just 20/60.
So you're like a rookie just coming
yeah.
in.
And she's going back and forth, and I said, listen, trust me, I can still see with one eye shut, I can see where that fire is.
Yeah.
And with both eyes open, I have 20/25 vision, so I see just fine. She goes, well, yeah, you know what, you do pass when it comes to that and everything. And I said, I'm getting a lot of complaints from the guys on the floor that every time they come over here, they're getting all this runaround about how you don't do this and you don't pass this, and they're... That is not what we were told. We were told that touch your toes, jump up and down a couple of times, and come over.
That's how it was presented to us. It was more or less just a formality. But, okay. All right. Well, let us know. If it turns into an issue, I mean, we don't.
That darn
you know, my belief was this was all done in good faith. So
it was, and I already talked to Linda about it today. I said, hey, listen, if this keeps going, you guys are going to need to get involved in this and say this is BS. These guys are coming in, establish a baseline. Unless somebody has some kind of just massive heart problem or something that needs to be retired, I see that.
But you
everybody has little hiccups, you know. I've got bumps and bruises. I've got a compressed disc in my neck, and it's all
from being a long term,
yeah,
a long time fire.
Just wear and tear.
I've hit my head. I don't know how many times, you know, because everybody.
Well, that explains it.
Well, everybody builds the code here in the city, you know. Nobody.
I don't have that excuse. I can't use that one.
So I'll go. I don't know how many houses I've walked through, and they add on in their backyard, and they put this little step. When you step down, you go into it.
You don't even know. Yeah.
Well, they drop the header down, and you're thinking, oh, you cleared it. You know, I'm already 6'3", and then I've got a helmet on. I'm 6'7", 6'8", with that thing on. Well, they don't build it. They build it out 6'5", because I'm nice and short. I don't have any problem. I'll come through. Wow. And you don't realize it at the time, but
after
all of a sudden, one day, I'm like, numbness, pain in my left arm. I go in, I have an MRI done, and sure enough, I got a bulged disc, and it's just that repetitive smack in your head. Another great example is garage fires. Our pike poles are 6 foot tall. And I know that coming out, but you'll walk out, bring the wooden garage doors that have the springs. Well, the springs melt in the fire. So we use a pike pole on each corner to hold the door up so we can go in and out. Well, I'll go walking out, and then duck, but I don't realize that I'm not ducking enough, and I'll hit that 2x4 that's right on the end of the thing. And, you know, you don't hit that hard, but just enough to jar your head and jar your head and jar your head, and after 24 years, I've got a compressed disc in my neck. And it's just, it's one of those things. It doesn't bother me. Every once in a while, I get a little numbness in my finger. You know, but the city owns that, and the county owns anything from now on. That's my baseline. I was a little miffed at the nurse practitioner yesterday. I said, listen, I don't mean to be
argumentative.
I said, I don't mean to be argumentative with you, but that's my baseline. And that's what I'm coming over to the county with. And she, you know, she snapped right back with the, well, we have to have standards. And I said, absolutely. For a new employee that's never been hired, the standard is, but all of us, I said, you have a range of guys from 22 years old to 55, 60 years old. And not everybody can perform at the same level. This is our baseline. This is where we're set so that the county knows what they're coming in with. She's not
tell
them
to give
that.
Physicals to all the firemen that've been here as long as you. Yeah. See where they fall. Yeah.
All right.
Let's do a comparison.
Thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. We'll see you guys.
Yeah. All right, Henry. I'm out.
We'll see you later.
Yeah.
Out
for the day.
folder. One.